The Sports Gambling Podcast is brought to you today by Amazon. Amazon, your lead pipe lock for online retail. Log on to sportsgamblingpodcast.com and click the Amazon link to support the podcast. Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I am Sean, stacking the money green with my partner in picks, Ryan, Real Money Kramer. Ryan, where to start?
There's only one place to start, Sean.
Yes, that is, unfortunately, the place we have to start. We are taping this today, Wednesday, June 20th, 2013, which apparently is Tony Gandolfini's last day on Earth. Unfortunately, he passed away, heart attack, 51.
I like how you mixed his character's name with his real name.
Tony Gandolfini? Oh, yeah. Yes. James Gandolfini. Tony Soprano. Well, he did feel like he basically lived the part of being Tony Soprano. Awesome show. Hands down, greatest TV
this
show.
This was the actual ending of The Sopranos. Delayed 10 years.
If David Chase has his way, they won't release what killed Tony Soprano.
Oh. Yeah, let the audience decide for themselves.
Hey, it's just, maybe he died. Maybe it's just he lives his life always thinking he might have to die. You know, it's purgatory.
It's really a metaphor, Sean.
It's a metaphor for believing. That's why they play Journey's Don't Stop Believing, because it's all about believing. They believe in God, and they believe in this code of ethics. It's just an awesome show about Goombas, and
Well, the other thing about the ending is that it came full circle, right? It was the ultimate climax of his anxiety that he'd been dealing with. So,
I guess, but it's also just frustrating from...
No, yeah, you always... Look, I like them leaving you guessing a little bit, but you gotta do a little bit. You gotta do a little bit of work.
Yeah, it felt like me as a cop out.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't argue that point, but I was arguing with someone I work with, and I basically said it's The Sopranos was one of the most important television shows in the history of TV. I mean, it really, sure, Oz was around first, but exactly. There weren't shows like The Sopranos before The Soprano. I mean, think of all the great shows on today that are on cable and HBO and things of that nature. They didn't exist back then.
Yeah, I mean,
this was the first show.
You could say The Sopranos played a role in the demise of network television, because all of a sudden, the appointment television, the show you had to see, was on cable. It was on pay cable without commercials, and that kind of, I think, really helped jumpstart video on demand and all that stuff.
It really broke the format, or most format. I mean, before that, you could argue there's been a lot of sitcoms that have been like legendary great shows, but this was probably the first great like television drama, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it pioneered the single camera movie style TV show.
And you could argue that he's the single greatest character from a TV show. At least in my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, it's, how do you compare a Tony Soprano to a Homer Simpson?
Well, that's what I was going to say. You can put Homer Simpson on the list. You can put Tony Soprano.
Maybe a Jerry Seinfeld, but even that.
I think Jerry Seinfeld, like, I think the sitcom world, I think if you had to pick one, you're going to pick Jerry Seinfeld.
Well, yeah, but, and even Seinfeld, as much as it revolutionized things to a degree, there definitely was other sitcoms like that prior to,
Cheers.
I mean, Bill Cosby.
But, yeah, I mean, you could easily make the argument. Well, then, and I guess, like, in dramatic television, though, can you think of a better single character? I mean, I actually have not. I've seen, like, half of one episode, but I guess you have to throw the dude from Breaking Bad in.
Oh, yeah. Very good. I think Yeah, I mean, I think Breaking Bad is up there. But you got to, like with any of these things, you got to give it to The Sopranos because The Sopranos did it first. But as far as like pure pound for pound acting performance, I think you could put Bryan Cranston up with Tony Soprano. Just that whole moral ambiguity, the fall from, oh, I don't know. It's even, you might even lean a little bit more towards Cranston because he started out completely wholesome and then turned into something else where Tony Soprano shows you different sides and whatever, but I think it's...
But it's in a way that he has the inverse character arc. He starts out as this ruthless guy.
Yeah.
And, you see a little bit of his, like, softer, like, talking to the psychiatrist side, but he's kind of overall... That's another point. He's really he's a bad guy that, like, you liked because the show was... Like, that's how good he was at it. He was so charismatic that you... almost rooted for this guy who, I mean, he was a criminal. Bottom, I mean, right? Like,
yeah, well, it is. I just, unfortunately, or coincidentally, I just started rewatching The Sopranos because I have HBO Go, rewatching from episode one, the entire series. And yeah, you forget, like, you fall in love with these characters, and then they'll also, just out of nowhere, they'll do something crazy, ruthless that reminds you of, like, oh my God, oh wait, these are bad guys. Like, I was just thinking about the episode where, I don't know if you remember, but Paulie, he gets paranoid that he's not kicking enough upstairs, and then he breaks into this friend of his mom's, some old lady,
yep.
And she catches him robbing, and she threatens to call the cops, so he just basically strangles her, yep, right there in cold blood, this innocent old lady. And you're like, no, Paulie, it's disturbing. But then you got to remind yourself, oh no, these guys are sociopathic murderers.
Yeah, I mean, a guy named Paulie Walnuts doesn't just like have tea with old ladies. But
well,
I mean,
he
just
did, though. But that's the funny part of the show.
That's just the opening scene of The Sopranos when Christopher and Tony are chasing a guy down on like a corporate business lawn, run him over with their car, and beat the shit out of him. That's your introduction to Tony Soprano, and he became so, I mean, I don't remember until that show where, you know, other than football on Sundays, like that, we played poker when I was growing up in high school. We played poker and watched The Sopranos. But by the way, Sean, you had an awesome opportunity just now to misuse the word ironic and you didn't. Congratulations.
You're like, I checked myself there.
Yeah, but I mean, even taking it to the fact that, can you think of a more anticipated season finale?
No.
Series finale?
No.
I mean, Seinfeld.
Seinfeld was up there, yeah, but...
I mean, it was almost like the Super Bowl. Everyone watched The Sopranos finale.
I was so pissed when they cut that off.
I mean...
Can you imagine now...
Well, I watched it with you, Sean.
Yeah, I'm just saying, could you imagine now if that happened with, like, social media and stuff like that, what Twitter would have done?
It would have been interesting to see what happened. I mean, because, in a way, I don't think you'll ever get that kind of experience again just because of... will there ever be a show that's so good, that is so unique, that is anticipated that much when it ends?
Well, and also the viewing schedule. I feel like that was, I mean, DVRs were still around, or not as much when the show first started, especially. So it could have been the last appointment television, where actually had to set your day around.
Not only that, but now with things like Netflix and, you know, Amazon Prime and HBO Go, there's less urgency to watch something right away.
Yeah, although I still feel like Game of Thrones people seem to...
But I know that I have on demand and all these channels. If I miss something, I either record it or I watch. You know, I can watch it later. There's this less urgency.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I saw that today and I was like, man, I was shocked he's only 51.
Yeah, he definitely seemed older, because then you do the math and how old was he in the show? Because
show started what, the late mid to late 90s?
So he was 37.
Yeah.
He was like started in what, 99, I think.
Which I guess actually makes sense 37? With the age of his kids and everything.
Yeah, but it just, he looks really old even at the beginning of it.
I mean, me and my friends in high school, even each season, you would just hear his breathing more and more. And it's like, wow, he's really getting into this character. And then actually listening to Max Kellerman on the radio coming home, like they were talking about how you could argue that he's the greatest character actor of all time. I mean, and I was going through it. Like, I've seen a bunch of movies where he plays a small character role, and he's really good at it. And then just he kind of almost hurt himself by being so good at Tony Soprano that...
Yeah, well, it's tough. I mean, especially if you're a TV actor, they see you so much of one thing. That's why some people, good actors or like higher name actors, are afraid of doing TV because they see you. Whereas like a movie, it's only what, an hour and a half. Whereas you're watching an hour every week for weeks on end. I just watched the episode last night where there's some confusion about, oh, is Tony hooking up with Adriana? And he was doing coke at the club, and I'm like, he came out of the office all coked up. I'm like, man, that guy's too fat and too heavy. He's gonna have a heart attack. You can't be doing coke like that. Literally watched that episode last night, and that thought crossed my mind. Very bizarre. I actually, when I first moved out to LA, I interned at Entertainment Tonight, and got to go to the, I think it was the 2003 Emmys, and I was hanging out backstage. Tony Soprano, a.k.a. James Gandolfini, came back, and I said, congratulations. He said, hey, thanks a lot, and shook my hand. Seemed like a very nice guy.
One last thing about how great The Sopranos and James Gandolfini were. So Boardwalk Empire, of course, is starring Steve Buscemi, who plays a fictional character, or a guy loosely based off of a real character, right? So the guy he's based off of, really, later in his life, was kind of Tony Soprano. He's a little heavier set, wore glasses, like kind of would have been perfect for James Gandolfini. And they were so worried about people just thinking this was like another like Soprano spinoff where let's go, like they're casting Tony Soprano in this other role.
Oh,
that they cast someone completely the opposite end of the spectrum.
Oh, okay.
That's how good Tony Soprano was, or James Gandolfini was at being Tony Soprano.
That is pretty crazy.
Because you wouldn't want to compare Steve Buscemi.
And now
to James Gandolfini.
I'll try and track down the link, but there is the FBI released like audio tape of people, like mobsters that they were actually taping, talking about the Sopranos giving away their secrets, like some of their scams and stuff that they talk about in the show. The mobsters complaining about how it's too realistic, the show.
Well, wasn't David Chase, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
He was, I don't even know what else he's done, but I remember reading an article about how he was always really into the authenticity of stuff, and he apparently frequently had real mobsters around, or at least retired mobsters, whatever you want to call them, to make sure they're doing authentic stuff. So I wonder if that's how they were getting that kind of information.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that'd be interesting to look up. But, oh, Ryan, we're going to get to Game 7, guys. Don't worry. We'll do a Game 6 recap, Game 7 preview. But a lot of interesting news and notes going on. Aaron Hernandez, Ryan, he has not been yet ruled out in a homicide. Sounds pretty crazy. First off, now it's coming to light. A guy is suing him. This happened a few months ago. A guy in Florida suing Aaron Hernandez for discharging a gun in
his unrelated.
Face.
Yeah.
Unrelated. But this came to light at the same time, I guess, for shooting him in the face and damaging his eye. It's a very bizarre story because the guy's suing him for damages, yet it appears there's no criminal complaint. He was never charged. There was no police record, it appears. Very, very interesting.
So, here's the story with that. So, Alexander S. Bradley is suing Aaron Hernandez for claiming the New England Patriots tight end shot him in the face. And he originally told the police he did not know who shot him, but provided a description of two males to the officer. So it sounds like, I don't know what it sounds like. That's weird.
That's very bizarre. I mean, I understand not riding on Aaron Hernandez if you think he's going to come kill you.
Yeah. But anyway, this most recent thing is they found a man dead in an industrial park about a mile from Aaron Hernandez's house. It was a guy named Odin Lloyd. He was a semi-pro football player who they've now discovered had the connection between him and Hernandez is that Hernandez's girlfriend's sister dated Odin. So it certainly.
Well, and then there's even more evidence circumstantial evidence.
They found a rental car in Hernandez's name a mile from the scene, and they're apparently looking for another car that they is believed to be registered to Hernandez.
And also, he was not being cooperative with police.
Hernandez was not believed to be the, be a subject, a suspect in what is being treated as a possible homicide.
I don't know.
That being said, he was taken away in an Escalade, like a SUV today.
Oh, really?
With his allegedly with his lawyer. So.
Oh, maybe he went in for questioning.
And they searched his house for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
That's pretty thorough. I mean, he's got a big house. That's still pretty thorough.
Yeah, it sounds like there's definitely something going on here. Either he knows the guys who were involved in it or played some role, right?
I mean,
it feels like a lot of evidence to kind of be kicking around. Ryan, honestly, though, if you... Now, this is... Wouldn't you be cooperative? Like, I don't understand being not cooperative if you're not involved at all.
Well, here's where it gets even... Here's why you know there's a good chance he might be involved. Sports Illustrated reported that the link between Hernandez and the case was a rented Chevy Suburban with Rhode Island plates that the police had been searching for some time. So that
searching for some time before this incident?
No, after when did the incident happen? A couple days ago?
Yeah, but I don't get that. The police go, hey, where's this rented Chevy Suburban?
No, they found the car. That's what led them to Hernandez.
Oh, okay.
So they find this car that they believe to be involved in this crime. It's a rented car in Aaron Hernandez's name.
It's funny how... Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it seems like...
Seems like he could be in trouble. Seems like, Ryan, between him and Gronk, looks like Tim Tebow could be playing tight end
for
the New England Patriots.
That's the real reason they brought him in.
Okay, Ryan, let's get to it. Game 6, one of the greatest NBA finals I can remember. Am I wrong? An NBA finals game.
You know what? Oh, can you make your statement again one more time?
One of the greatest NBA final games that I can remember.
I thought you were about to say it's the greatest NBA, one of the greatest NBA finals.
Oh, no, not
which
as a whole.
People are saying, and it's like, well, wait a second, guys. Did we forget that 3 of the games have been blowouts? Maybe you could argue 4.
It's weird. The series has been good because it's been back and forth, but the individual games.
Yeah, 4 games have been decided by double digits.
Yeah, that's
the
weird.
Other 2, overtime.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
And it's been back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Each team has won 2 blowouts, and each team has won an overtime game.
It is funny, too, because I said the Heat aren't going to lose 2 in a row, and then you pointed out that they don't have to. Now we're in that situation. We're in that
exact
situation.
We both could be right.
Yes. Basically, I said Heat in 7. That's what, obviously I'm going to stand by that prediction.
I think I said Spurs in 6, which should have happened, but.
Should have, could have, would have.
That's right, Sean.
All right, Ryan. I feel like people, now, I'm blind. My judgment was blinded because I took the Heat in the second half. They were down 6, so laying 7.5. So they ended up covering.
Oh, wow. Nice.
It was a nice win. Wasn't that optimistic? Although even when they were down 10 at the end of the third quarter, I knew they had another run in them. But after they came all the way back, was leading, and then got down by 6 again, I thought it was over, honestly. LeBron chucked up a couple threes, hit one. Ray Allen, what a clutch 3. Overtime, more crazy plays. What really it came down to was after Ginobili got stuffed, Or fouled, depending on who you bet on. Ray Allen caught the ball. So right then, they were up by 1. Spurs intentionally foul. So now it's 101-100. Heat are up. Luckily, Ray Allen hit both. But even if he hit one, I still would have covered. However, I was kind of, in a way, almost hoping that he would hit one, because that would mean they were up by 2. So that they would definitely play defense and not intentionally foul. But I was very worried that with 1.9 seconds, they might just intentionally foul. Because that's an interesting play. Now, you're against the intentional foul there, right? Or you're for it?
No, never foul.
Yeah. See, I guess it's because guys can put up a shot. Like, all right, they inbound the ball. They're at half court. 1 second's gone off. Why not foul then?
They've actually done the research on this, and it's basically 50-50.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's like hitting on 16. You just got to decide what you're going to do and stick with it.
Yeah, although you can actually the math says that if it's a three, you should always stay on a three card 16 versus 20. Interestingly enough.
Sorry, what's up?
Three card 16, always stay.
Oh, really?
Versus 20. 19 or 20, yeah.
Huh. All right. Good to know for some blackjack out there. So, Ryan, any thoughts coming away from game six? Did you think – now? What I was getting to was, what was your take on the officiating in the game? I was biased maybe because of the heat. I thought there were a lot of just no calls, and I thought they ended up getting a decent number of the calls right with the help of review.
I would prefer that every NBA playoff series gets officiated like this. No, there's not – I think overall the refs have done very well. There haven't been a lot of fouls. Not a lot of people, guys going to the line excessively.
Yeah.
I will say that I thought early in the game yesterday that they were getting away with some really, really obvious fouls on Tim Duncan. And I think yesterday's game was a good example of whistles being affected by the outcome of the shot.
There were
a couple where you could tell it would have been a foul if Duncan missed, and there were a couple, like that one where LeBron clearly it was a clear charge on LeBron against – it was either Duncan or someone. And no whistle. Ball goes up, misses.
Yeah.
He falls down. And then the whistle, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
And not only was it a late call, but it was just a bad call. But I would say overall, I'd have no complaint. If I was
– Yeah, I don't know. And honestly, that Danny Green three, I mean, if you call that foul, that's crazy. I don't subscribe to the idea that, oh – hey, you got to call it the same way at the end of the game. No, I think at the end of the game, you should err on the side of not calling things and letting the play decide it. Why these guys get on the radio and they talk, well, if it's a foul in the first quarter, it has to be a foul in the fourth quarter.
Well, I do agree with that, but what I don't agree with is. I'm fine if you're gonna let people play a little bit more towards the end, but. You gotta find a way to there has to be a better way to penalize flopping.
Yeah.
I mean, Battier's been like, it's almost been comical what Shane Battier's done in this series. But mainly that Bosch flop from game four, I think it was.
Yeah. Well,
So Bosch making $20 million a year. He flops and gets a very it's a pretty big swing because it would have been a layup and the crowd was into it, and instead going the other way, and it's like, if I was a player making $20 million a year, I would gladly pay $5,000 yeah. for that. It's like,
and you want to kill the players, and rightfully so, but it's tough because these refs are making the calls, and if you don't exaggerate, sometimes they're going to miss the call. Like LeBron, when Ginobili elbowed him in the throat, that was a legit elbow to the throat. Like, yeah, maybe LeBron overreacted. He didn't necessarily need to go to the ground, but if he doesn't have a big reaction, I mean,
well, that's the problem, right?
Yeah,
the problem is that at the end of the day, they're still acting to get the foul call, whether it's a kind of a flop, a flail, whatever it is.
Well, someone, you know what they? I think it was one of the Van Gundys. Who's the one not working?
They right just now? Need. They're both not working.
No,
not one.
Jeff Van
working,
Gundy
but
is.
The, all right.
Stan Van Gundy's.
I don't know what he said. Here's the solution. And it's helped soccer a little bit. You flop in soccer and get caught, yellow card. That's a big deal. That's like the equivalent of a technical, basically.
Yeah, technical foul, or even, I think this would be, I've heard him talking about in different shows, penalty box. One minute penalty box. No, actually, you know what they said? Van Gundy, his take was that the reason they don't call flopping is because, like, in the case, they're worried. Basically, the issue is with the refs. So the thing is, the league still wants them to make those calls. So, like, on LeBron, where maybe he flopped and it was a foul, they still want that call to be made. So if they don't make that call, then they're worried about getting graded poorly. So if they went to the senior referees and said, like, hey, we're going to be more lenient on these flop calls and we're not going to grade you poorly because of them, they said the refs would sort it out themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the number one reason this will never get cleaned up is that the NBA relies too much on their stars. If you made it so that if you got caught flopping. Like, so coming back to the yellow card system, you get two yellow cards in a segment of play. So let's say a series, a playoff series. You get caught with two flops, suspension. One game suspension.
Yeah.
I guarantee that would clean up flopping. But the NBA doesn't want to do that. Because, I mean, look, and, I don't want to watch a final series without Tim Duncan or Bosh or LeBron.
No, and I don't – and really, doesn't – I don't know. It's weird because you don't want to win a game on a flop call. And as much – and then, like, guys are going to try and, like, get guys to draw a flop call.
Do you see what Battier does? Every time he sets a screen – he stands there, he grabs your arm, and then when you try to pull your arm away, he flops. And he gets those calls, and it's like, that's the kind of thing, like, once a guy, the ref should be aware of this and
yeah,
just not call it.
They're supposed to watch tape. And
it's like, I watch games casually, and I notice this. It's crazy. Same with Ginobili, the way he throws his hands up in the air. It's like,
he's got noodle arms.
It just annoys me when – the main thing that I hate about LeBron flopping is it's like you don't need to flop.
Yeah, he's going to get calls.
But
that's why – and that's – man, LeBron's so frustrating when – because you're just like –
you see when he gets mad and he just dominates. Like,
yeah, it's just like he just takes it to the rim. And it's like, yeah, why don't we keep doing that play where you're way better than everyone? And I understand it's exhausting to just do that every single play, but he'll take like three quarters off. Like – dude, just pepper that in. And then when you start driving, you leave these wide open guys kick. Like, my thing is, I think he tries to establish the role player shooting to open up the middle so he can drive. When really, it would be a much more effective strategy to just come out and just drive to the rim in the first quarter. If he's either going to start scoring and have insane confidence and start dominating the paint, or they're going to start coming in to help and leave wide open shooters.
Yeah.
Instead, he works the opposite.
Yeah, but I mean, what he does makes sense. You want to get your role players involved early so they have the confidence
later. I get it,
later.
They want to shoot. But
you don't want them cold going into the, you know, maybe that works for Ray Allen, but I wouldn't feel great about the other guys.
But he just seems to take too much time off offensively.
Yeah, I mean, the other
rest him for 10 minutes. And just have him dominate on offense.
Well, that's the thing, is that we always talk about, is he getting tired? Is guarding Tony Parker causing him to fatigue?
He doesn't seem tired. I don't know.
If he does,
rest him.
Yet another reason why I'm not sure he's human. He doesn't appear to get tired.
That's the thing. People are like, oh, he's going to get exhausted. The dude does not look exhausted. I don't know. Maybe I'm not seeing something, because he was bringing it hard at the end of the fourth quarter and overtime. He just has this other gear that he doesn't feel like always shifting to. I don't understand it from a competitive
standpoint. Well, it could be that that's why he stays. That's how he can play the whole game.
I think the thing is, LeBron,
you ever played 50 minutes, Sean?
Yeah.
Wait, so how many? What? It went to one overtime, right?
Yeah.
So it was a 53-minute game.
Yeah.
He played 50 minutes. I mean, in his defense, he was commented. I mean, to give you an idea, the next closest was Chalmers with 43 on the team. But to give you an idea, like, he actually talked about this. I think I saw an interview this past offseason or during the season, that one of the biggest things he's done outside of – they asked him, like, things that he had done to help improve his game. And he said, like, well, for sure my post game was lacking. I spent a lot of time working on that this offseason. But the other thing that I learned – he was talking about working out with some old-timer. It might have been Dr. J. Basically, learning how to rest. Learning how to rest while being on the court, so you don't need to come out of the game. And
He definitely does do that. Like, in transition where they're setting stuff up, you'll see him walking up.
Well, it's one of those things. Like, would I rather him go hard for 42 minutes, or in a regular game, 38 minutes, or be on the court the whole time and take it easy? I'd rather him just be on the court the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's all how much is he really taking off and –
What do you think it seems
to me like he has this FU mode that mentally he doesn't – he never really – the problem with LeBron is he's not challenged that often. And it takes a lot for him to feel challenged and to feel backed into a corner. But when he gets there, look out.
I want to tell you – here's some interesting stats from the last game, right? Because everyone – no one's going to argue that LeBron definitely like kind of – he put himself out, like, especially down the stretch. He kind of started dominating, right?
Yeah.
He definitely had one of his better games. Another triple-double. Second one for the series.
Yeah, well, him and Wade have a horrible plus minus.
His plus minus was minus one for the game yesterday.
Yeah.
Which, it's relatively deceiving because he played the whole game.
Yeah.
So that, but more importantly, Wade, who played 37 minutes, his plus minus, minus 15.
Yeah.
Mike Miller's plus 15.
Yeah, you look at Mike Miller's plus minus. That seems to be the best lineup they got.
Hubie Brown, who is awesome. If you listen to the ESPN radio broadcast, he does a really good job of like painting the picture and just kind of saying what needs to be said. When they took Dwayne Wade out of the game sometime in the third or fourth quarter, or when they put him back in the game and replaced Mike Miller.
Like, whoa.
Hubie Brown's like, all right, now, if they're going to do this, Dwayne Wade, Mike Miller has been diving on the ground for balls, giving him that three-point shooting, tough defense. Wade has to do that. He can't come in and spend his energy on offense. He needs to play hard defense. And
Wade chucks up air balls. That substitution alone could have cost him the game.
Yeah.
It was really not a good last few minutes there by Dwayne Wade.
All right, well, who do you like in Game 7?
All right, well, Ryan, I think we have to address Greg Popovich's coaching. You were looking to put him up there in the Pantheon with Phil Jackson. What do you think about his coaching in Game 6?
I have no problem with anything he's ever... I mean, look, he played Boris Diaw a shitload last night after not playing him for
two games. Subbing out Duncan.
I know. You can't pick and choose where his bone... Like, you could say it's all about the result, right?
Yeah, I mean, if Diaw makes that free throw, we're saying Greg Popovich is
greatest. Diaw was awesome in the first half. You're like, wow, why didn't he play Diaw the last couple of games? He's such an idiot. I don't know. It's one of those things. Like,
I think he did. He did overthink this a little bit.
Maybe, but that's. I mean, but the one thing you can consistent. Credit with Popovich is he's consistent.
Yeah. No.
If you're playing well, you're playing. I mean, there's been times where he sat Duncan down the stretch because Splitter was tearing it up. He just rolls with the guys who are getting it done at that moment.
Yeah.
Gary Neal. Gary Neal took some bad shots. Gary Neal went to the bench. Got yelled at. Gary Neal comes in and starts hitting shots because he's on fire. He ain't going to call a timeout. He's not going to Sean Green you.
What does that mean?
Oh, when you try to call a timeout when I was in the middle of an insane hot shooting stretch in our rec league.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, I felt like the team needed it, and we did lose that game. Oh. All right, Ryan, Game 7 preview. What's the spread's looking at? 6.5? 6?
6.
Over-under?
Over-under, 189.5.
Yeah.
Money line's 255.
I like. I always like the under after an OT game on short rest, right? Or is that a square play?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like a lot happened in that game. Between the fast start and the overtime that led it to go to what, 203?
Well, it's crazy because it was, yeah, I mean, before they started off, they were on pace for like 120 each.
Yeah, they were on serious fire.
When Ray Allen hit that shot, it was 95-92, which I think was 187, so they're actually under. They would have hit the under if Ray Allen would have missed that shot.
I think it took a lot for them to, I mean... Yeah, I guess I would lean towards the under.
Yeah, I feel like their legs are going to be tired.
I would probably stay away from... I mean, I don't know. What can you do here? Everything's kind of right where it was to start the series, right? The series price is about the same as the money lines.
Yeah.
The spread is exactly what you would expect the spread to be. I guess if anything, I mean, I just think the Spurs are well coached. They have... Good. I can't see this game being a blowout. Can you?
I mean, I guess there's a chance. There's no way San Antonio blows them out, right? There's maybe a chance the Heat blow them out, but I say that's pretty small. I think. I think six. Here's what I like. Kind of what I did in Game 6. I like waiting around and then seeing what the second half line is, and hopefully you can squeeze out essentially a Heat money line.
Now, the better question is, will the fans be booing the Heat after booing Chris Bosh after he told all the fans that left early they should stay home for Game 7? First of all, why would you have left that game early? It wasn't a 20-point game.
It was... 5 points.
That is why Miami doesn't deserve to win championships. That is why LeBron should not have gone to Miami.
Yeah, that's something that gets overlooked when everyone gives LeBron James shit for the big three thing, and people think, oh, it was a press conference, oh, it was the decision.
I think the Miami Heat might have been behind that a little bit.
Well, which was definitely a part of it, but I think what we're overlooking is that Miami's not a sports town. I think if he went to, like, a true, legit basketball town,
New York,
Boston, Chicago.
Don't go to – well, here's why you don't go to Boston or Chicago. The bar is so high. You're not getting a statue next to Jordan.
That's true.
And you're not going to outdo Bill Russell's 8 championships. You go to New York, you win one, boom, statue outside MSG. And not to mention, this would be a great time, Sean, to bring up the fan up video. For those of you who hadn't seen it, so the same Miami Heat organization that had the big press conference before the team played a game to talk about how many championships they were going to win. They had a video that they made and sent out to, I believe, all their season ticket holders, basically explaining how you're supposed to show up before the game starts and stay till the end. And it was called fanning up. Anyway, back to the game. I don't know. Gun to my head. I'm going to stick with my Spurs. I would go under Spurs and the points.
Yeah, that's the thing. I like Heat. I think what I would do here is Heat moneyline parlay with the under. Or, like I said, wait around, watch the first half, and then look for a second half time. Because I think there's a decent shot that you could see the same thing. Either, you know, San Antonio's down a little bit or Miami's up a little bit. But I like Miami second half, probably. Obviously, depending on how the game shakes
out. Yeah.
For you to get the official take, you'll have to follow us on Twitter, @GamblingPodcast.
Yeah, Sean.
All right, Ryan. I don't know. Anything else you want to get to?
Well, the NBA draft is on. We'll probably do another one before then. That's the 27th. Not that we have much to add to that. But real quick, I know you're not a big soccer fan, Sean.
No, not at all.
But for those of you who have been watching, the U.S. just had a nice stretch in June where they won all three qualifying games. And I got to be honest, I played soccer, watched soccer my whole life. This is the team, Sean. This
really?
Is the team that I believe can make that run in the World Cup. We finally have like a legit scorer. We have a strong – our team's younger. We're deep. We have the best goalie in the world.
And when's the next World Cup?
2014 in Brazil. Qualifying's going on right now. The U.S. has basically locked up a spot in the World Cup. They virtually – it's like a 99.9% chance they're going to get there. I don't know. I just – this team has chemistry. They have a German coach who kind of got a lot of shit, and then his methods kind of got the team together. This is going to be the team that – I mean, I don't think the U.S. has won a game in the round of 16 in a
now
long
what,
time.
What are we looking at U.S. to win the World Cup odds?
I would. I mean,
1,000 to 1.
No. It would be more like in the 25 to 50 to 1.
Oh, okay. So not that crazy.
No, but I mean, yeah. No, but so there's only 32 teams, Sean.
Right. Okay. Well,
and you have to qualify.
Okay. So basically, like a mid-major winning the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. Like yeah. I mean, we're gonna end up being one of the top, probably the top team in CONCACAF, which is one of the weaker regions. But yeah. I would go as far as say I'd be surprised if they don't advance out of the group play stages, which is normally where they lose.
Then they go to the round of 16.
Yeah,
right?
So there's 8 divisions of 4. You top 2 go on, and that's kind of where they fizzle
out.
I'll
get into the World Cup because it's us sticking it to these other shithole countries. But
well, it's also that rare scenario where we're not the best in the world.
Yeah.
So.
Ryan, tell me this. This is going to be the deal breaker as to whether or not I get into the World Cup. Will there be vuvuzelas?
No.
Thank God.
Well, I don't know actually for sure, but I don't think so. That didn't work out very well, and we're in Brazil. It
drove me crazy.
I think the South Americans have a little more respect for ears.
Oh, it was just like a hum.
Yeah, it was relatively annoying, but I truly believe that this team you can get behind some of the guys. There's some like hippie looking dudes. There's some Mexican looking dudes. Some black dudes. White dudes.
Nice. That's what I need.
Yeah, well, that's the difference with this team is that we typically lose guys to Mexico and other countries. We're now taking the players who maybe had a chance to go play for Mexico, and they're playing for the U.S. So it's kind of a big deal. Anyway, one last thing, Sean.
Sure.
Doesn't happen very often. Head coach, trade talk.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was weird. We were talking about this last week on the podcast as a potential. Then it seemed like it got thrown away. We're talking, of course, about Doc Rivers and Kevin Garnett being traded to the Los Angeles Clippers for DeAndre Jordan and some draft picks. Seemed like it was off the table. Now, just recently read a report that it was back on. And it sounds like this has to go down just because if you're Doc Rivers, how do you go back to this team and coach him?
It's not his decision. He just said he wouldn't be interested, basically.
Yeah, I guess it just seems like he's kind of distancing himself from the Celtics team, and I think it would be tough to get him back to coach. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Well, this is the setup, right? They get Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
They get Doc Rivers, and then what? They make the blockbuster deal.
Who's the blockbuster deal?
They get Dwight Howard.
Oh, for Blake Griffin.
Maybe.
That would be pretty crazy.
I mean, that by all accounts, that's why the Clippers held on to Bledsoe. Because they believe he will be a piece in that deal.
Oh, wow. That would be crazy.
So you have Kevin Garnett, both as a, a piece to get Dwight Howard, learn, teach him how to get fired up, but also Kevin Garnett as your third big man?
Well,
potentially?
I don't think DeAndre Jordan.
Blake might not get dealt in that Lakers deal.
So they would. What would they get for
it? Well, I don't know if it's going to be a deal. I think.
He might just be able to sign straight.
He might just take, because people always talk about it, it's less money. It's less. It's also one less year. So you become a free agent again in 4 years instead of five.
Now, what about salary cap wise? Does that? Is Donald Sterling doesn't strike him as a guy who's going to pay luxury tax.
Who knows? I mean,
that would be pretty crazy.
You get Jordan off the books, he's 10 mil.
DeAndre Jordan's making 10 million?
4 year, $40 million.
That's a pretty sweet deal. What's Blake making?
Probably a lot. I mean,
probably like 15.
I mean, it's just one of those things like Blake. Although I think are they really a good pair?
Who? Blake Griffin and Dwight Howard?
Yeah.
I
would think so. They're kind of, I mean, they both don't shoot
think,
good free throws.
I think the better
though.
Pair is Blake Griffin and Kevin
Chris
Garnett.
Paul.
Well, Blake Griffin, Kevin Garnett, and Chris Paul, because Blake Griffin can play closer to the rim, and then you have a big man like Kevin Garnett who can play deeper.
Okay, so here...
Someone was saying that's what they think's kind of hurt Blake Griffin a little bit, is how close to the rim DeAndre Jordan plays.
Here's who is on the books for the Clippers this upcoming year. DeAndre Jordan for almost $11 million. Caron Butler for $8 million, expiring deal. He'll most likely get dealt in a Dwight Howard.
Oh, man. I like Caron Butler, though.
Blake Griffin, $16.4 million.
That's pretty close.
Jamal Crawford, a very affordable, $5 million. Grant Hill for $2 million, although he just retired. Eric Bledsoe for $2.6 million. Willie Green, $1.3 million. That's a non-guaranteed. And then some other guys.
Bledsoe's a pretty good... pretty good value at 2.6, right?
So the cap is expected to be around $62 million, I believe. So if you get rid of, let's just ballpark it, you got, let's say Jordan gets dealt and Butler,
yeah, that's almost 15 right there. What's
Butler and Bledsoe go in some sort of deal?
How much is that?
So now let's just say you have Blake Griffin for 16 and Jamal Crawford for 5. So let's say 22 plus Butler and Bledsoe, that's another 10. So $32 million right there.
Okay.
You get rid of 10 of that, you're not $22 million, and you give Howard and Paul the $20 million each.
62.
So you're slightly over the cap. Maybe you do some I mean, I know they backload some of those contracts, so maybe you're not over. And you go sign some veteran exceptions.
That would be a pretty interesting big three.
Now, the more likely is Blake Griffin goes with Eric Bledsoe and maybe Butler to the Lakers, and now you've just gotten rid of $25 million. Well, that doesn't make sense because the Lakers are not in the business of taking on salary. They're so far over the.
Well, you're going to be getting rid of Dwight Howard,
and Artest will be amnestied by all accounts.
Here's
sorry,
the thing.
Metal world peace.
Here's the thing, though. You can't get, if you're the Clippers, you can't get rid of Blake Griffin.
You can if you're getting Dwight Howard.
No. Dude, Dwight Howard.
Do you
want to
win a championship, or do you want to have a guy who dunks a lot?
You want to have a guy who dunks a lot.
Okay, so Howard also dunks a lot.
Yeah, but his dunks aren't cool. They're boring, and he doesn't dunk a lot. He's a pussy. I don't know. I like rooting for the Clippers, and I really hope they don't get Dwight Howard.
I mean, I think Dwight Howard gives them a much better chance to win a championship.
I agree, but I'm not really concerned about them winning a championship. I just like them as a likable bunch of guys who throw alley-oops.
Now, if that being the case, if they do get somehow manage to get Blake Griffin and Dwight Howard, that's serious Lob City.
Yeah, that'll be crazy. That would be, I don't know, it'd be fun just to see it.
I mean, isn't this what we want to see, just to stick it to the Lakers?
Yeah, that's true. I would like, whatever happens, I just want to see the Lakers get screwed. And that's why I don't want them to have Blake Griffin, because I feel like if he's on the Lakers...
He tries really hard.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
That he also will be exposed for being the fraud that he is if he's on the Lakers. Although, who knows, maybe with Steve Nash... I don't know. The Lakers are going to be...
I think he's also had Vinny Del Negro the entire time. I think Doc Rivers as a coach and Kevin Garnett, I think, would be great for Blake Griffin.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
All right, Ryan. 78 days till football, so hang on. Thank you guys for listening.
Oh, before you end it, Sean, sure. Hard Knocks announced who they're doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who
do you know? You get one guess, Sean.
No, because
I'll give you a hint. It's a team that has been done before recently, within the last like 6 years.
Cincinnati?
Yep.
Ugh.
Which, I gotta be honest, I feel like they've cleaned up their like act. They're not as hilariously like misfitty anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that premieres August 5th or something like that, Sean.
Oh, sweet.
It might actually premiere when we're in Hawaii, so we might have to. A little Hard Knocks watch in Hawaii.
Oh, HBO Go. God bless
you. Yeah, man.
It. Hard Knocks, Hawaii. Oh, Ryan, and the t-shirts are up.
Oh.
T-shirts available at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Click the t-shirt link on the side. Two sizes, large and extra large, $20. Shipping and handling is included. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Gambling Podcast. Rate, review, and share Stitcher and iTunes for the Sports Gambling Podcast. I am Sean, stacking the money green, and he is Ryan.
Blake Griffin's a fraud.
Kramer, let it ride.